Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report on an explosive California Public Utilities Commission hearing over a $3.3 billion settlement with utility corporations over closure of the San Onofre nuclear power plant. Advocates for ratepayers contend that the settlement unfairly burdens ratepayers with costs of the failed nuclear facility while rewarding San Diego Gas and Electric Company and Southern California Edison stockholders and their executives. Former city attorney Micah Geary argued on behalf of ratepayers at the hearing. Geary repeatedly pressed Michael Peavy, chairman of the Public Utilities Commission, to answer questions about alleged secret settlement talks with utility companies. Peavy denied having any meetings with the Utility Consumers Action Network, or TURN, but when Geary asked Peavy if he had met secretly with Southern California Edison, Peavy interrupted and became peeved, shouting out a profanity. Now, this is a word we're allowed to say on the radio, so we're going to play this clip for yourself to hear how your chairman of the Public Utilities Commission responded to an advocate for the ratepayers. That's you, folks.
As far as TURN goes, I think the general knowledge my relationship with TURN is to be fair, chilly, and I have never talked to Mr. Friedman on this topic during that whole time at all, period. Mr. Friedman, that's it. Sorry.
What about Southern Cal Edison?
Sorry. About Edison? Yeah, I'm not here to answer your questions. I'm not here to answer your goddamn questions. Now shut up. Shut up.
Really? Geary also asked that Edison President Ronald Lutzinger be required to confirm if his stock rose astronomically in value just days after the nuclear settlement was announced. His credibility is at issue, Geary argued, insisting that questions of financial motivations would be allowed in any other court of law. But Administrative Law Judge Melanie Darling refused to require that the questions be answered. Peavy has long been accused of being overly cozy with utilities, including accepting thousands of dollars in expenses paid for by SDG&E or its parent corporation, Sempra, including a European trip. Darling has drawn criticism for banning videotaping at a prior hearing, a move that Citizens Oversight Commission has contended was illegal. The hearing raised serious questions over the conduct of public officials and just whose interests the Public Utilities Commission was really representing.
This is Stevon Marshall with a warning for pet owners. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration warns that at least 1,000 dogs have died from pet jerky treats linked to illnesses and 5,600 illnesses in dogs, cats, and at least 3 people. The jerky treats were in chicken, duck, and sweet potato flavors. Nearly all of the jerky treats were imported from China. The FDA is testing both imported and domestic treats, seeking answers to the cause. Some samples tested were found to contain a painkiller drug, though it is not known if this was linked to the illnesses. Nearly two-thirds of the cases involve gastrointestinal symptoms or liver disease. Another 30% had kidney or urinary disease, and 10% had neurological, skin, or immune system problems. No specific brands are named in the FDA press release. This is not the first time that jerky treats have been found to be tainted. Thousands of cases have been reported in recent years, and the FDA has issued numerous advisories on these products previously. The FDA emphasizes that jerky treats are not required for a pet's balanced diet. The most effective way to protect your pets from this hazard is to avoid feeding them jerky treats, especially any that are made in China or have ingredients imported from China. If your pet is ill, seek immediate veterinary treatment and be sure to advise your veterinarian if your pet has consumed jerky treats. For additional information or to report an illness or death in a pet that has consumed jerky treats, contact 240-276-9300.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. My very special guest today is Terry Wyatt, and Terry is one of three candidates running for district attorney. She is a career prosecutor who has served 26 years as deputy district attorney. Terry, welcome to our show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I always like to ask challengers to a race. Tell us a little bit about what made you decide to jump into the race. Why are you running?
Yes, thank you. Well, I've been a career prosecutor. My entire legal career has been spent as a deputy district attorney in this county. I came to San Diego in 1983 to go to law school. I went to USD Law School, and I am a California native, and I specifically went to law school to be a deputy district attorney. My father was a California Highway Patrol officer. My mother was a registered nurse at County Hospital in San Bernardino, so public service was in my blood. So I feel that there's a change of leadership that is necessary at the DA's office, and I think nationwide, people feel there's a change of leadership for our public officers.
That brings me to my next question, which is, why are you challenging an incumbent district attorney when you actually have worked under Bonnie DeMonis, the current DA?
Well, the office needs to be about justice. In fact, the values and principles that I believe your district attorney needs to have are truth, justice, fairness, equal protection of the laws, integrity, and a high standard of ethics. And I believe in those values to my core. That's why I went to law school. That's why I became a deputy district attorney, to make sure I was practicing criminal prosecution strictly for justice and integrity. And I think that's what I will bring to the office. I think it's important that the office not be about someone's political career, and the office cannot be about political motivations.
Now, Bonnie DeMonis ran for mayor recently against Mayor Filner. She didn't win. There were some controversies that arose in that race with some of her political contributions, a $100,000 contribution given to her by a Mexican foreign national. I understand there's actually been a conviction of the person who made that donation that was against the law. I guess it begs the question, would you like to comment on that, Terry? I should add that Mr. Brewer has also had some controversy, the third candidate in the race, involving some of his contributions as well.
Bob Brewer took money
from Nancy Hoover, who was involved with the whole J. David Dominelli convicted, you know, Ponzi scheme runner. So there's been some questions about why he would take donations from that kind of a source.
Yes, I would like to comment on that. Politicians all the time will run for a different office when they're serving their term. However, I think the position of district attorney is so important. It is the top prosecutor in this county. It is the person responsible for running an 1,100-person office. It's countywide, and the district attorney has to review the most serious crimes up and down this county for who to seek the death penalty on, which investigations to do politically, political figures, etc. When you are the elected district attorney and you're getting paid by tax dollars to do that job, that's the job that you need to be doing. You should not be out running for mayor. I think when you're more focused on city politics, then your ability to just run the district attorney's office, which you're being paid to do, takes a back seat. And we saw that happen in the mayor's race. And then what we also saw is, yes, a meeting by the current incumbent with a Mexican national in Coronado during her mayor's race. And this was a meeting to determine what kind of support and financial contributions that he could provide for the mayor's race. Mm-hmm. And it was very questionable for our district attorney, first of all, to even go to that meeting. She knows, as the district attorney, that she can't take foreign money, and he's a foreign citizen. And this money was laundered through, there was two different very substantial contributions, $100,000 the first time in February and another $100,000 in May. And both of those contributions were illegal. We do not want our district attorney doing that.
Now, I do need to clarify that there actually has not been any legal action or sanction, as of yet at least, against Bonnie DeMonis herself. However, there has been against the individual who made the donation, just to make that clear. Now, there's also been a controversy over some endorsements in this race.
Bonnie DeMatteis has endorsed some judicial candidates, I understand, and her opponent, Bob Brewer, is saying he thinks that's not appropriate and he wouldn't make any endorsements of any politicians if he was to win the office. What is your position on that, and would you make endorsements if you were elected?
I think there are certain endorsements that the community wants to look to the district attorney for. I think as long as your guiding principle as district attorney is to seek and obtain justice and run the office with the highest level of integrity and the highest standard of ethics, it is perfectly okay for the district attorney to engage in endorsements for judges or the sheriff or county supervisors, things that impact the district attorney's office directly, as long as the goal is only to seek and obtain justice. I don't see a legal problem with that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Mr. Brewer will be able to follow through with his promise that he won't make endorsements. Every time we've seen the DA make that promise, she's broken it. Yeah. So I don't think it's inappropriate to make some endorsements as district attorney.
Now, Mr. Brewer himself has faced a controversy of his own in that he is a former lawyer for San Diego Gas and Electric, actually for Sempra Energy, the parent of SDG&E. There were some controversies over his handling of an investigation into Sempra Energy over bribery and some other things down in Mexico involving their liquid natural gas facility down there, where the U.S. Justice Department basically pretty well asked Sempra to investigate itself. And of course, the conclusion they came up with is there was nothing wrong here. And he was one of two attorneys that was involved, reportedly, in that investigation. Do you have any concerns about a corporate lawyer, someone, you know, so closely tied to a major corporation in San Diego that's had its own set of legal controversies? You know, they've been sued by fire victims, for instance, for causing the major wildfires. There's issues involving San Onofre, ratepayer issues. Could you conceive of a scenario where SDG&E executives, for example, could face potential criminal charges? Do you see any conflict of interest in having a corporation's lawyer holding the highest law enforcement position in San Diego County?
I see a lot of issues with Mr. Brewer running for district attorney, and my second motivation is I don't want to turn the district attorney's office over to Mr. Brewer for a number of reasons. He points the finger at the incumbent for accepting fraudulent funds, and he accepts the highest maximum individual contribution from Nancy Hoover. Mm-hmm. Nancy Hoover was a client of Mr. Brewer. He defended her, and she committed a very large, the most serious criminal Ponzi scheme in the history of our county. She and J. David Dominelli stole over $80 million from 1,000 victims. They lost their entire retirements. And not only did Mr. Brewer defend her as a criminal defense attorney, but he stayed friends with her, and he accepted the maximum donation in his campaign for district attorney. I don't think that's the mindset of the person we want for district attorney.
Is it unusual for a criminal defense lawyer to be a district attorney, or do they most often come out of the prosecution side of the aisle there?
I think it is highly unusual for a criminal defense attorney to even be motivated to want to be district attorney. Certainly anyone charged with a crime has a right to great representation. It's important in our system of justice. However, when someone is doing criminal defense work and then becomes friends with their clients who they know to be high-level fraud defendants and high-level fraud criminals, notorious criminals, that's a problem. But it is unusual for someone who spends their majority of their career and their entire career in this county representing notorious criminals to even want to be the district attorney. And Mr. Brewer's never been a deputy district attorney in the DA's office in San Diego County.
He's had no prosecution experience at all?
Not in our county. He had 2 years as a deputy district attorney in 1975 in LA DA's office. That is very remote and very limited.
Almost four decades ago.
Yes.
Listeners, if you're tuning in late, we're interviewing Terry Wyatt, a candidate for district attorney here on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. If you were elected as district attorney, what would your priorities be for the office?
Thank you for asking that. There's a number of things that I think we could do better. And I want to make it clear that I don't think everything that Ms. DeMatteis has done in this office has been horrible unless she's been the DA for almost 12 years.
I'd like to interject a question. I'd like to ask you, what are the areas that you would like to change or improve, and what are the areas that you agree with perhaps her leadership on and things that you would continue or expand?
Thank you. I want to create an elder abuse task force first and foremost because we have not done a good enough job protecting our seniors.
Yeah, the UT had an investigation, very sad cases of many cases of abuse locally. Some of them were quite shocking. Someone found on the floor, had been unconscious, injured, and died, and nobody checked in on them for something like 24 hours or more.
Yeah, our county alone in 2013 has reported 14 deaths of seniors in assisted living communities, facilities, and nursing homes, just in our county, believed to be from abuse or neglect in 2013.
Wow.
That is unacceptable. We need to do a better job protecting our seniors. Mm-hmm. We've only had one district attorney investigator assigned to elder abuse crimes for our entire county.
Wow.
That is underservicing our seniors.
So you expand that.
I would create a task force, an entire task force, put a lot more prosecutors on it, deputy district attorneys. We are lucky to have Paul Greenwood, who specializes in elder abuse. He's nationally known as an elder abuse expert. However, he can't do it alone. There needs to be more prosecutors assigned strictly doing elder abuse and investigators. And I want all of the law enforcement partners to put resources into a task force so we can do a better job. Because as we all get older, we become more vulnerable to crimes and financial crimes, as well as, unfortunately, sexual and physical abuse crimes. And we just need to do a better job there.
On the elder abuse issue, I know that's certainly very important to me. My own father was in an assisted care living home for some time until he passed away. Have you had personal experience? Have you seen firsthand what this is like?
Yes, my mom is 83, and 2 years ago, she moved into an assisted living community, not in this county, but I've seen how vulnerable she's become because she was a registered nurse and married to a cop, had a lot of common sense, and she's even had someone call and try to defraud her with trying to get her credit card number recently.
Wow.
Yeah, which is very scary.
Yeah.
It is near and dear to my heart for that reason. And I've also had some cases that I've prosecuted where elders have been very badly hurt. I prosecuted William Burks, who grabbed an 84-year-old lady in front of her own church in National City, took her into the courtyard, and very badly abused her physically and sexually, very horribly. And happy to say he's in prison for 3 life terms plus 58 years. He will actually never be out of prison.
Thank you for sharing that information with us.
Secondly, I want to shift the resources that we've been using in the district attorney's office to try to rehabilitate prison parolees, adults who have already been in and out of prison. We've been doing all these programs trying to rehabilitate adult parolees under Bonnie Dumanis, and I think that should be left to social working agencies and not the district attorney to put resources there. I'd like to take those resources and move them into the juvenile justice system. When a kid is 12, 13, 14 and commits a minor crime, let's turn them around. Let's try to prevent them from becoming a hardcore gang member, from becoming a serious adult prisoner, or from ever going to state prison.
Yeah, that's a very interesting idea. Is there anything else, Terry, that would be an initiative of yours if you were elected as the next district attorney?
Well, I want to say I want voters to have a chance to elect a career prosecutor, not a politician.
Mm-hmm.
That's who I am. I've been a deputy district attorney my entire career. I've tried almost 90 jury trials, 58 of them felonies, very, very serious felonies. I have a list of prison inmates, 19 of them, who are in prison for life that I personally prosecuted, and I always make sure that they stay in prison. I go do my own life or hearings on those prisoners, and so the victims are very well protected. I'd like to do a better job for our victim assistance programs. I know we can do better with that. I know Ms. Dumanis has done some good things with victims, but I think we can still do a better job getting them their restitution sooner, feeling that they have a better voice. And my entire career, that's been a big focus, is protecting victims. So I think we can do that better. And also, I served as a division chief for nearly 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the office from the ground all the way up. And I think that members of this entire county deserve to have a career prosecutor running this office, not a career criminal defense attorney, and also not a career politician. I think the current incumbent has been in a little bit too long, and I think the focus has shifted for her with more politics and less justice, and we need to do a better job there.
Okay. Terry, who are your major endorsers?
Well, I'm endorsed by 2 retired Superior Court judges, Judge Victor Ramirez and Judge Bill Draper. Both of those judges I've known for my entire career. I've appeared in front of them on all kinds of cases for years and years, and they're both highly respected Superior Court retired judges. I have the endorsement of Robert Doyle, who was the sheriff of Riverside County for over 30 years as a deputy sheriff and then the sheriff. He also served on the parole board as the commissioner of the state parole board. And I have just received an endorsement from the U.S. Gun Club. I am a very big proponent of the Second Amendment. I am the NRA. I think we need to make sure that our freedoms are protected and that we're following the Constitution in all areas. So I believe very strongly in the Second Amendment. So I'm happy with all of those and proud of all those endorsements. And a lot of my endorsements are individual endorsements from people that I've worked with previously in the district attorney's office or police departments or sheriff's departments, rather than the sheriffs and police unions. It's more individuals who know me personally and know my work.
What's been the most rewarding experience out there on the campaign trail, Terry?
Meeting so many great new people. I've been going to a lot of the chambers meetings and a lot of other business meetings and different groups, and I've met so many quality people that are real interested in the community and interested in having a safer community and making sure that we have justice at all levels. And also the friends that have been my lifelong friends, how much they've stepped up and really committed to helping me and helping get more justice in this community as a whole, because they understand that my motives are genuine.
Yeah. Terry, I understand you've been campaigning all over town. One of the latest I'm hearing about is a motorcycle group. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I got the privilege of being invited to the El Cajon Harley-Davidson dealership for a garage party for women riders. I'm not a motorcycle rider.
So were you out there in your leathers and your helmet?
No, they were trying to recruit more women who would ride motorcycles, however. And there were about 45 women Harley and bike riders out there at this garage party. And it was very fun. It was a great group of women. And they had a raffle for women who've not ridden motorcycles for a Learn to Ride course. $250 course, and I actually happened to win the raffle. I'm going to learn how to ride Harley my bikes.
You can have some new wheels for getting around the campaign trail.
And there's a magazine called Quick Throttle about women motorcycle riders, and they're going to feature the this garage party that they had, and they're going to mention that I was there. So that was an exciting group of women to meet. I enjoyed them, and I think I picked up a lot of votes during that meeting.
Well, that sounds like fun. Terry, I understand that there's a debate coming up soon among the candidates. Can you tell us when and where that's going to be and if all three candidates are planning to attend?
Yes, my belief is all three candidates have, in fact, committed. The debate is Wednesday, May 28th at USD at the Shiley Theater, and it's going to be sponsored by the La Raza Attorneys Association.
Very good. And we're going to get some information and put that up on our website, so if you need the details, you can check out eastcountymagazine.org in our politics section, and we'll have all the information there for you.
And also, all three candidates will be interviewed again for a second time on Politically Speaking at the end of the month. That should air on 7:39 or NBC TV on May 31st.
Terry, is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about yourself, your candidacy, or this race?
Well, I've been proud to be a deputy district attorney in this county for my entire career. I've worked alongside some of the most talented prosecutors, investigators, paralegals, and legal support staff in our office, and also countywide with different agencies, police agencies, and federal agencies as well. Being a deputy district attorney allowed me to utilize what I learned from both of my parents to enforce the laws and respect the laws, from my father, the CHP officer, and also from my mom, the registered nurse, to help victims of various serious crimes help them heal from their very traumatic experiences. So I've been very proud to have served in public service. I believe that public officials need to remember that they're there to serve the public and not the other way around. And so that's what I want to bring back to this office.
We've been speaking with Terry Wyatt, a candidate for the district attorney. Where can people get more information about your candidacy if they're interested in learning more, Terry?
Yes, they could go to my website, terrywyattforda.com.
And that's spelled TerriWyatt. So TerriWyatt4DA.com. Very good. Thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you very much.
Albert Ballou, Cherry Bomb, and Teddy are coming to East County. Bobby Brink and her animal rescue crew from Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine are on the road again, this time heading to North Carolina to rescue four bears. Albert and Cherry Bomb, two Alaskan silver-tip grizzlies, were displayed in concrete pits at a roadside tourist attraction. Teddy and Baloo, Himalayan black bears, were in other menageries with equally deplorable living conditions, Brink stated. Currently living at a private residence in North Carolina, these four are poster bears for the burgeoning issue of the exotic animal industry and private ownership in the United States today, said Brink. Their story is yet another living example of the need for additional legislation so bears, big cats, and other exotic animals are not kept in inadequate private conditions in the United States any longer. All four bears will receive medical examinations and treatment, as well as a new home at Lions, Tigers, and Bears, a nonprofit animal rescue facility in Alpine. The rescue was made possible by the support of local donors, other groups, and a generous Come On Down call from lifelong animal advocate Mr. Bob Barker, host of The Price is Right, Brink added. She also praised the County of San Diego staff for assisting in the permitting process to bring these four bears to San Diego's East County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Trevor Hill.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update from the campaign trail in San Diego County. Judicial candidate Ken Gosselin is stirring up more controversy. This time, ethical questions are being raised over his campaign signs. The signs say, "Judge Gosselin" in large letters, with the word "for" in very tiny letters so that they can't be read from a distance. It's against the law to call yourself a judge if you're not one. Not even if, like Gosselin, you previously served as a temporary judge pro tem hearing traffic and small claims cases. Gosselin is not even listed currently on the Superior Court's roster of judges pro tem, though, and he said he is taking time off due to his campaign for Judicial Seat 25 on the Superior Court. Michael Orfield, the retired presiding judge on the San Diego Municipal Court, has told KPBS that Gosselin's campaign engaged in misrepresentation by falsely implying he is a judge. Orfield added that California rules of court specifically make it clear that no employment relationship is established by being a judge pro tem. Gosselin's campaign signs, in addition to implying he is a judge, also claim he is law enforcement's choice. But the law enforcement community is far from united over which candidate to back. In fact, Gosselin and one of his opponents, Brad Weinrib, have each drawn significant endorsements from law enforcement. Weinrib, a deputy attorney general, is endorsed by Sheriff Bill Gore, the San Diego County Probation Officers Association, and the San Diego Deputy District Attorneys Association, as well as by former San Diego Police Chief David Bejarano. Gosselin's endorsements, according to his website, include the Deputy Sheriff's Association of San Diego County, the Fraternal Order of Police in San Diego, and Police Officers Association from National City and Oceanside. The third candidate in the race, Michelle Hagan, is a former prosecutor and judge pro tem who also provides legal tips to the public on her trial-ready website. Gosselin has been the center of ethical questions since his opponent filed a legal challenge to Gosselin's claim about his education experience, as we previously reported. A court order required Gosselin to change his ballot statement. He had claimed to be Harvard-trained when he only took a mediation class there, and he claimed to have heard numerous criminal and civil cases when, in fact, he only heard traffic and small claims court matters. Gosselin has also been rated lacking qualifications by the San Diego County Bar Association. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The wildfires that destroyed 65 homes this month in San Diego County led to a state of disaster declaration for our region. The fires also took a heavy toll on local governments' budgets. The cost to local governments for emergency responses, firefighting, and recovery from the wildfires is an estimated $27.9 million, the County of San Diego has announced. In addition, private property owners suffered an estimated $29.8 million in losses. County officials compiled and submitted the preliminary figures to the state of California as part of disaster reimbursement processes. Board of Supervisors Chairwoman Diane Jacob thanked Governor Brown for moving so swiftly to declare the state of emergency. Now the county is requesting extra assistance from the governor to help reimburse local agencies for their emergency costs out of the California Disaster Assistance Act monies. Many area agencies pitched in. They sent firefighters to the front lines, law enforcement personnel to assist with evacuations, public works crews to close roads and assess damage, and employees to staff emergency operations centers around the clock. The biggest costs were associated with responding to the Poinsettia Fire in Carlsbad, which had an estimated $12.5 million in costs to fight the fire, staff the city's Emergency Operations Center, and much more. The city of Carlsbad estimates another $8 million in costs to restore habitat and control erosion as a result of the fire. The Cocos Fire cost the city of San Marcos about $10.4 million, and that includes estimated firefighting-related costs as well as costs to stabilize and control the erosion of now barren hillsides near homes. The County of San Diego estimates over $3 million in preliminary costs related to multiple fires, and that includes sheriff's-related expenses for deputies to conduct evacuations, traffic control, and other law enforcement services, and operating firefighting and law enforcement helicopters. The City of San Diego has a preliminary cost estimate of $1.3 million related to multiple fires. These are calculated by local agencies and don't include the cost of lost business due to the fires or the cost to area school districts, for instance. When it came to private property, Carlsbad had about $12 million in losses, including 5 homes, 18 apartment units, and a commercial building. Others sustained damages. San Marcos estimated nearly $2.2 million in private property damage. The Cocos Fire was responsible for destruction of 5 homes and minor damage to several more. In the unincorporated county area, there was an estimated $15.6 million in private property damage, a total of 34 homes in the unincorporated area, as well as a business and 15 outbuildings were totally destroyed, and an additional 2 homes saw major damage, and several outbuildings sustained minor damage as well. For more information on the recovery process, you can visit sdcountyrecovery.com. You can also prepare for future emergencies by visiting readysandiego.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with the Health Report. Did you know that increasingly scientists are finding a link between what you eat and how well your brain functions? Your diet is one key factor in whether or not you will develop Alzheimer's disease or other forms of dementia as you age, according to the Alzheimer's Association. According to the most current research, a brain-healthy diet is one that reduces the risk of heart disease and diabetes, encourages good blood flow to the brain, and is low in fat and cholesterol. Like your heart, your brain needs the right balance of nutrients, including protein and sugar, to function well. A brain-healthy diet is most effective when combined with physical and mental activities, as well as social interaction. Having a healthy body weight is good for your brain as well as the rest of your body. For overall good health of brain and body, a long-term study of 1,500 adults found that those who were obese in middle age were twice as likely to develop dementia in later life. Those who had high cholesterol and high blood pressure had 6 times the risk of dementia. It's best to adopt an overall food lifestyle rather than a short-term diet and eat in moderation. Here are some more tips. Reduce your intake of foods high in fat and cholesterol. Studies have shown that high intake of saturated fat and cholesterol clogs the arteries and is associated with higher risk for Alzheimer's disease. However, HDL, or the good cholesterol, may help protect brain cells. Use mono and polyunsaturated fats such as olive oil, for example. Try baking or grilling food instead of frying. Increase your intake of protective foods. Current research suggests that certain foods may reduce the risk of heart disease and stroke and appear to protect brain cells. In general, dark-skinned fruits and vegetables have the highest levels of naturally occurring antioxidant levels. Such vegetables include kale, spinach, Brussels sprouts, alfalfa sprouts, broccoli, beets, red bell pepper, onion, corn, and eggplant. Fruits with high antioxidant levels include prunes, raisins, blueberries, blackberries, strawberries, raspberries, plums, oranges, red grapes, and cherries. Cold water fish contain beneficial omega-3 fatty acids, halibut, mackerel, salmon, trout, and tuna. Some nuts can be a useful part of your diet. Almonds, pecans, and walnuts are a good source of vitamin E and antioxidants. A study of elderly women showed that those who ate the most green, leafy, and cruciferous vegetables in the group measured in at 1 to 2 years younger in mental function than women who ate few of these vegetables. Vitamins may also be helpful. There is some indication that vitamin E or vitamins E and C together, vitamin B12 and folate may be important in lowering your risk of developing Alzheimer's. A brain-healthy diet will also help increase your intake of these vitamins and the trace elements necessary for the body to use them efficiently. For more information, visit the Alzheimer's Association website at www.alzheimers.org.
This is Stevon Marshall with an East County Magazine Crime Beat Report. The El Cajon Police Department has wrapped up an extensive investigation into graffiti vandalism, or tagging. In response to a recent increase of tagging throughout the city, the El Cajon Police Department's bike team, along with detectives, launched a proactive enforcement operation targeting taggers. Over several weeks, through the use of Graffiti Tracker, a GPS-enabled system designed to help identify and track graffiti, officers identified several prolific taggers and served several search warrants. This effort resulted in 7 arrests of persons responsible for 193 incidents of graffiti vandalism, totaling over $62,000 in damage. Captain Jeff Arvin said, "The El Cajon Police Department and the City of El Cajon take graffiti very seriously. We consider this a public nuisance crime that affects the quality of life for all who live, work, or visit our community." The El Cajon Police Department urges anyone who witnesses an act of vandalism or graffiti tagging to call 619-579-3311 to report the crime. You may also call the City of El Cajon Graffiti Hotline at 619-441-5533 or visit elcajonpolicedepartment.org/crime/graffiti. To learn more about the city's graffiti abatement program, or to register to have graffiti removed from your property free of charge.
A man accused of attempting to murder his father on the Los Coyotes Native American Reservation is now in custody. The San Diego Sheriff's Office had issued a bulletin asking the public to be on the lookout for Campbell, who allegedly opened fire on his father at 4:30 on Sunday, May 18th on the Los Coyotes Native American Reservation, then fled to hilly terrain in the area of Hot Springs Mountain. Tribal police detained the suspect Monday at a home on Camino Moro in Warner Springs, then later turned him over to the sheriff's deputies from the Ranchita Warner Springs substation, said Sergeant Brian Jenkins. The victim was admitted to a hospital, but his condition and prognosis have not been released by authorities. Investigators have not disclosed a motive for the shooting. Campbell will be transported to the Vista Detention Facility and charged with attempted murder. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Nikayla Jefferson.
This is a public service announcement from the San Diego Registrar of Voters. Tuesday, May 27th, is the deadline to request a mail-in ballot for the June 3rd election. You can download an application from the Registrar of Voters site and email or fax it in. Your request must include your name, registered address, and date of the election, the address where your ballot should be mailed, and your signature. You can email your request to rovmail@sdcounty.ca.gov. That's ROV, as in Register of Voters, mail@sdcounty.ca.gov. You can also call 858-565-5800, since the registrar is now accepting mail ballot requests by phone. That number again is 858-565-5800. Under state law, all requests for mail-in ballots must be received, not postmarked, received, no later than 5 p.m. on Tuesday, May 27th. If you missed the mail-in ballot deadline, you can vote in person at the registrar's office at 5600 Overland Road in San Diego any Monday through Friday before Election Day between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. After May 31st, early voting hours will be extended starting at 7 a.m. And of course, you can also cast ballots on Election Day at your neighborhood polling place. If you are already a permanent absentee voter, you don't need to reapply. To learn more about voting in the June 3rd election, visit www.sdvote.com.
The East County Chamber of Commerce is warning members to beware of con artists preying on businesses. The Chamber is very concerned about the impacts of our recent disaster, and we want to remind you that our staff and business community are available to assist and support your business through hardships like these, said Eric Lund, president of the Chamber. He also warned business owners about a rash of mandatory fire inspection con artists going around to businesses who are not with any fire department. They have been telling businesses that they need to allow for a fire inspection, and then they are being sent a bill for the inspection. Do not fall for this con, as the fire department does not charge for fire inspections, Eric Lund warned. Also, if you have any cleanup at your business, be sure you do not contract with workers who require payment up front, as this is another common scam after fires like we've had. Only pay partially and check to be sure the company is reputable. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This is Miriam Raftery reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. The Rancho San Diego Sheriff Station wants your help in finding a missing person at risk. Please be on the lookout for 28-year-old Rudolph Bambill. His mother reported him missing from their Lemon Grove home on Sandy Bev Lane on Monday, May 12th. Family members say that Mr. Bambill has a history of medical issues and he needs to take medication. When last seen, he was wearing a full beard, mustache, and short-cut hair. Mr. Bambill is Hispanic, stands 5 feet 8 inches tall, weighs about 200 pounds, and has brown eyes and black hair. You can see a photo of him on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you see Mr. Bambill, please call the Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200.
Budget negotiations will begin soon, and many of California's female lawmakers want to make sure the state's spending plan does a better job of helping women and children. Members of the California Legislative Women's Caucus say now that the economy is recovering, it's important women and children aren't left behind. Assemblywoman Bonnie Lowenthal says early childhood education keeps California women working and children learning.
The evidence is clear. Access to quality early childhood education contributes to children's well-being, brain development, and school readiness. It provides a strong foundation for opportunity through a child's lifetime.
The Women's Caucus wants more funding for child care so women can start and keep working, higher quality early childhood education, and more access to state preschool for the lowest income children. The Women's Caucus also wants fair pay for early care and education providers, many of whom are women like Pamela Sharps, who provides daycare for 8 families. She says quality child care helps boost women out of poverty by allowing them to go to work, knowing their children are in good care.
Our child care centers in low-income communities are consistent and safe places that our children need when the neighborhoods around them are constantly falling apart.
The Women's Caucus wants the revised state budget to include funding to increase providers' reimbursement rates, which have been frozen since 2007. They say without the increase, child care providers may be forced to close their businesses, leaving California with a lack of providers. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
President Barack Obama marked Memorial Day with a surprise visit to U.S. military leaders and service members at Bagram Airfield in Afghanistan. The president met with the U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan, James Cunningham, and Marine Corps General Joseph Dunford, Jr., commander of NATO's International Security Assistance Force. He also met with service members and visited wounded troops in the military hospital at Bagram, thanking them for their service. Earlier, in his weekly radio address on May 24th, President Obama promised that the United States will assure that veterans will get the care they earned while in service to our nation. The nation's history shines with patriots who answered the call to service, Obama said. They put their lives on the line to defend the country they loved, and in the end, many gave that last full measure of devotion so that our nation would endure. Every time an American casts a vote or speaks without fear, they should remember those who died to ensure those rights, the president said, adding, "Every chance we get to make a better life for ourselves and our families is possible because generations of patriots fought to keep America a land of opportunity where anyone of any race, any religion, from any background can make it if they try." He urged all Americans to remember those who have died in service to our nation today, adding, that their service and sacrifice will never be forgotten. But beyond Memorial Day, America must honor and uphold the sacred trust it has with veterans. In recent weeks, he said, we've seen again how much more our nation has to do to make sure that all our veterans get the care they deserve, the president said, referring to recent news reports indicating long delays in treatment at some VA hospitals. With the war in Iraq behind America and actions in Afghanistan winding down, the president concluded, we have to work even harder as a nation to make sure that all our veterans get the benefits and opportunities they've earned.
Honoring those who made the ultimate sacrifice. Hundreds turned out for the annual ceremony to honor those in law enforcement who've died in the line of duty. This year, the memorial is back at the County Administration Center. It had temporarily moved while the new waterfront park was being built. The event is a way of making sure these men and women are never forgotten.
When a peace officer gives their life, we all come together as one family, and that's what this ceremony is all about. We honor all the peace officers that, given their life, made the ultimate sacrifice. It's a wonderful profession. I think the noblest profession probably in the world. But it's a profession that sometimes calls for that ultimate sacrifice. And the least we can do is come out here and honor them, respect their families, and come together to reflect on the sacrifice they've made.
Dozens of names are etched in the glass dating as far back as 1864. In the County News Center, I'm Michael Russo.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with today's Green Scene Report. The San Diego Energy Foundation has been seeking to start up a Community Choice Aggregate, or CCA, as a competitor to SDG&E. If approved by the city, this CCA would allow consumers to purchase power from the CCA instead of San Diego Gas and Electric. Marin County and Sonoma have already started up CCAs to give ratepayers more choices on where their power comes from. Here's how it works. When a community decides to start a CCA, it sends notices to all ratepayers advising them that their billing will automatically be shifted to the new CCA, unless a person objects and wants to stay with the utility company, in San Diego's case, SDG&E. But now a bill in the legislature aims to restrict the ability of local municipalities to provide consumers with alternatives to buying power from utilities. Critics of the bill, AB 2145, call it a poison pill that would hurt, not help, consumers by restricting competition. If passed, the bill will require cities and counties to make consumers opt into a CCA instead of transferring them automatically unless they opt out. This would make it much harder to enroll enough customers to be economically viable. In Marin and other places where CCAs were established providing power from clean, locally generated power sources, less than 20% of those notified chose to opt out. Lane Sharman, co-founder of the San Diego Energy District Foundation, said that very few people opt in to anything. Thus, this bill guts the very provision of community energy law that assures a successful launch, all in on day one unless they opt out. In the Bay Area, Lean Energy's Sean Mitchell agreed, stating that AB 2145 would completely gut the ability of California communities to viably launch CCA programs that can compete on a level playing field with investor-owned utilities, EcoReport indicated. Marshall called the bill anti-consumer, anti-competition, and anti-environment. Ann Hancock, executive director of the Center for Climate Protection, called community choice the most powerful solution local governments have to significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions. This bill would steal that solution from cities and counties throughout the state, she said. Sierra Club's Andrew Christie said that if AB 2145 passes, community choice will be replaced with zero choice. Despite these objections, the bill has passed a policy committee and has now been referred to the Standing Committee on Appropriations.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on our story on AB 2145 that we originally reported last week. Since then, community opposition is growing. The bill, of course, would make it harder for communities to invest in clean energy through community choice aggregation, giving consumers alternatives on where to buy their electricity. Supervisors Diane Jacob and Dave Roberts are now among those who have signed a new petition asking the state legislature to oppose AB 2145 and put consumers ahead of utility monopolies. You can view a list of those who have signed it, read the petition, or sign it yourself at www.no2145.org.
Eureka! I found gold!
Julian celebrates its Gold Rush Days next weekend, May 31st and June 1st, evoking the community's colorful past. East County's historic gold mining town was founded right after the Civil War by Confederate veterans who headed west to seek their fortunes. The town was named for Mike Julian, who settled here with his cousin, Drew Bailey. But a cattleman, Fred Coleman, is the one who found those first lucky flecks of gold in a creek in Julian in 1870, setting off a gold rush in the region. This weekend, you can step back in time to experience what Julian was like during those gold rush days. The Julian Mining Company on Highway 79 will have historical encampments where you can pan for gold and meet miners, mountain men, and cowboys, see tomahawk throwing and mock claim jumps, as well as gunfights. There will also be an arts and crafts market, gem mining, pioneer games for kids, food and drinks. Admission is free at this location. The Eagle High Peak Mine and Museum will also be open for tours, taking you inside the mine to see what life was like in those early days of gold mining. Throughout Julian's historic downtown district, you can participate in a scavenger hunt and be on the lookout for a golden nugget at participating stores. You can also take a special train ride offered by the Julian Train and Gold Mine Tours. For reservations for this event, call 760-765-2288. In addition, the Julian Doves and Desperados will perform historic comedy skits at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and 3 o'clock both days next to the Julian Market. Julian's days as a mining boom town were over in just a few years, but soon a new bonanza was found in the rich agricultural soils that yielded bountiful crops of apples. No visit to Julian is complete without savoring apple cider and the handmade apple pies that have become this town's motherlode in modern times. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is a public service announcement from the city of El Cajon. El Cajon's Recreational Department is looking for energetic and motivated teens ages 14 to 17 to volunteer for the city's popular summer camp program. This is a great opportunity for those who want to gain valuable work experience and meet new friends, said Monica Zek, spokesperson for El Cajon. Typically, volunteers will be asked to work Monday through Friday from 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. and will work directly with staff in a variety of themed camps, such as indoor soccer, dodgeball, multisports, art, and fairy tale. You can pick up a volunteer application at the Bostonia Recreation Center between 2 and 9 p.m. Monday through Friday at 1049 Bostonia Street, El Cajon. For additional information, call 619-441-1670 and ask for Glennis Stainbrook, Recreation Services Supervisor. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.